We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Representative Chippendale, most of the gun-related violence in Rhode Island is concentrated in the poor parts of Providence. What do you think should be the remedy for helping to reduce that kind of violence?
Well, I believe very strongly, and I believe the data show, that we need to enforce the laws we have on the books when we do make arrests, and whether they are the firearms violations are primary offenses or secondary to other things such as drug raids, etc. We need to absolutely prosecute those to the fullest extent. And the data will show, and over the next several hearings and months, we will see, the data will show that there are over 50% drop rates on all charges relative to firearms violations in the city of Providence.
But people like Providence Public Safety Commissioner Stephen Perry say there are some problems with the existing laws. They say, for example, if a minor is in a gang and he's riding with some adult gang members, they'll pass a handgun to the minor because presently it's not illegal for a minor to be in possession of a handgun. That's one of the proposals in this 9-point plan. How do you respond to the criticism that there need to be some changes in the law to get at those kind of issues?
Well, that statement is absolutely incorrect, and that's part of the problem. There's a lot of misconception, misunderstanding of the laws. The possession of a handgun without a license in the state of Rhode Island by anyone is illegal, whether they're a minor or not. That in and of itself is a very serious violation. There are several statutes under which minors can be prosecuted for possession of a firearm illegally, and those statutes, unfortunately, are not being enforced again.
Let's go to Scott.
Why does anybody need an assault weapon who's not in the U.S. Army or the Air Force or the Navy?
Well, very simply stated, our Second Amendment gives us the right to do that. Okay, fine. We have an obligation to defend ourselves, our families, our country, our neighborhoods, whatever. We saw, I think, a very great example of the use of assault weapons in the riots in Los Angeles shortly after the Rodney King verdict, where the only part of that city that was not leveled and devastated by riots was Koreatown, as it's called, where the Korean community took to the rooftops with assault weapons, assault rifles, and they defended their community. Consequently, they shot at and shot several rioters and got them out of their neighborhood, protected their neighborhood. That was the only neighborhood left standing when the ashes were settled.
Now, let's be serious. If you look at defending our country, We have the biggest military in the world. We don't need average citizens running around with assault weapons, do we really?
We did in 1776 as well.
And no, we didn't have assault weapons in 1776.
No, we had the biggest military in 1776.
No, we didn't. The British did.
Exactly. And we were under their control. And when it came time for us to revolt against tyranny, and I'm not saying that we are living under tyranny right now, but if you were to say on September 11th that airplanes were going to ride into buildings and kill 3,000 Americans, you'd roll your eyes in disbelief. If I tell you that sometime down the road there may be a despotic ruler in the U.S. or in a certain state, you might roll your eyes down at that too. But that is precisely why the Second Amendment was put in place.
So you think we need this to protect ourselves from our own government, which we vote for?
From enemies, foreign and domestic.
Representative Chippendale, do gun makers have a responsibility to be a part of helping to reduce gun violence? And if so, what is that responsibility?
Gun manufacturers manufacture a product that is a perfectly safe product when used properly. When someone takes anything, and it can be anything, a car, for example, you can use it to kill people. You can use it improperly to do damage. Gun manufacturers manufacture extremely safe products when they're used properly. It's that simple.
The technology exists that would enable gun makers to make guns that could only be fired when they're used by a recognized owner. Do you think that is too onerous a requirement for gun makers?
Well, I think it would put the cost of owning a firearm out of the hands of your average everyday citizen, first of all. And second of all, it would create a problem if I'm the person who this gun recognizes as a legal owner and I'm killed in a home invasion, my wife would not be able to pick up that firearm and use it.
Why should it be easier to go buy a gun than to get a driver's license.
Because a driver's license is not a constitutionally protected right. That's a privilege.
We heard House Speaker Gordon Fox and Senate President Teresa Pivoweed this week describe the 9-point gun proposal in the General Assembly as a starting point, not the final point for what's going to happen. What do you expect to happen? We know efforts to make gun laws more stringent. Rhode Island have faced an uphill battle. How do you expect it to play out this year?
Well, you know what? I do very poorly at guessing outcomes, so I'm not going to do that. But what I will say is I respect that the leadership will listen to all the arguments. I suspect that everything will be out in the open. We will have all the opportunity we need to explain both sides of this and have, hopefully, a very intellectually honest debate about exactly what are we looking at and what can we do, because there are some proposals in this package that I agree with 100%, and I think will go a long way towards making Rhode Island a safer state.
Which are those proposals that you support?
Enhanced penalties for violators. As I alluded to, there have been so many arrests that have just been dismissed. We need to, when we arrest someone for a firearm violation, we need to prosecute them, and we need to prosecute them hard. We need them to pay. And when we do that, the word will get out. And not only that, those people will be in jail, and they will not be able to perpetrate the crimes that they are.
Switching to another topic, you're one of the tiny, intrepid bands of Republicans in the Rhode Island House, and I'm wondering, who would you like to see run for governor with your party next time?
switch of topics. All right, here we go. I don't have a favorite, Scott. You know, I like the names that have been mentioned. I really do have a liking for them in one respect or another, and I have a respect for them all. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
As Scott said, you are one of just six Republicans among 75.
Intrepid Republicans.
Intrepid, yes. Republicans among 75 state representatives in the General Assembly. What do you think the Republican Party needs to do differently so that we can have a real two-party system here in Rhode Island?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what we have to do is point out to people and let it be known that we're no different ideologically than a lot of the Democrats out there. We simply have an R after our name. And if you took the House and the Senate ideologically and broke it down, you'd probably see something close to a 50 or a 50-50 or a 60-40 split ideologically. It's just that certain people in certain areas, and it's a colloquial thing, you just can't get elected as a Republican in Providence or Woonsocket. It just won't happen. However, you can have someone who ideologically fits all the criteria. We have to do a better job reaching out to people and letting them know we're no different. We're just regular people who want to serve our state.
The new Republican chairman, Mark Smiley, says that eventually you should close the primary, the party primary. Is that a good idea?
In my opinion, I don't agree with that.
Why?
I think the system that we have now, especially because the majority of our voters are independent. And there's a reason for that, and that goes back to the colloquialism and this Democrat versus Republican ideological embracing of each other's philosophical ideals. We need to keep those independent voters able to vote in primaries.
What are your top goals for this legislative session?
Well, I walked into the State House on January 1st hoping to make some really good leaps and bounds relative to economic development. As we have in the past 2 years that I've been in the legislature, we've put together very responsible, very realistic economic development packages that will help Rhode Island prosper. Regrettably, a lot of the social issues have taken the forefront, and we haven't really seriously looked at what will make Rhode Island a prosperous place, which, as a legislator, I can tell you, I don't get a lot of calls about social issues. I get a lot of calls about, how am I going to save my house? How am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to put oil in my tank?
Okay, what are the two things you could do if you were the philosopher king of Rhode Island? Two things you could do for the economy.
I would gut the majority of the overreaching regulations that are placed upon businesses that place us at the bottom of every list
specifically
regulation-wise. I could sit here and list them, but we don't have the time for that. But the overregulation is one thing. We have simply too many regulations, too many fees, surcharges, basically things that are called something else but are taxes. That stops businesses from wanting to come here. Why would you come here and have to spend all that money to survive? No one's going to want to stay here. So specifically, regulations. I want the regulations gutted, for lack of a better term.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And State Representative Michael Chippendale, Republican of Foster.
Always a pleasure.